Hi, my name's Thor, and I'm a compulsive overeater. I want to thank you for asking me to come speak. I'm just getting over the flu, a cold, and I'm actually really glad because I didn't think much about what I was going to say, which is, I want to welcome the new people to Overeaters Anonymous. I know that when I got here, I was not really happy to come here. I was a secular Jew, and I didn't want to come to a synagogue. it was at the log cabin before. But, you know, I just thought, anything but this. You know, Overeaters Anonymous. I mean, come on, I'm in another program. Can't I just get it together and control and enjoy my eating like a gentleman? And I can't, to be here at the ungodly hour of before 9 on a Saturday. So for that, welcome. I know for myself, I certainly couldn't do it myself. I mean, the analogy of me trying to do it myself is, there was that documentary from the guy that walked the Twin Towers in the early 70s, and to me, trying to control and enjoy my food and not overeat was kind of like a high wire act, but being blindfolded and juggling like flaming bowling balls. You know, the reality is that I couldn't do it myself. And when I came here, I've been really grateful. I grew up in New York, partially in New York and partly in Europe, to an alcoholic mother. I had a very sort of bizarre childhood. You know, I grew up, as a five-year-old, I was living in a Greek island, translating Greek to foreigners to help teach them how to do Greek dancing, if you remember Zorba the Greek. And, this sort of, you know, band of drunken friends that my mother had, and at about, at 7 years old, before seven, I was always underweight. I had always been a very skinny kid, and at about 7 years old, I was molested by women, and then I from that time I started to eat, and at about eight years old, I can remember around seven, my mother was close to death with her alcoholism, and I can remember having dreams that I was going to die. I was right around my eighth birthday, and shortly thereafter, my mother went into treatment, and that's when I moved in with my grandparents. And you know, I'm grateful to my grandparents, but they didn't understand alcoholism. It was never really explained to me, when I lived with my grandparents, I developed a coping mechanism, and it was that's when I really started to eat cereal. You know, my grandparents, it was always, let's just have a smile, let's just be up. And I needed something to help me. And that was like either Special K or cereal bowls like about this with tons of sugar, and I could get there. I could put a smile on my face if I had that. And I started to be, I started to put on weight. And I never got, I was always about 10 to 25 pounds overweight. And food just became a comfort, you know. And I can remember, I lived with my grandparents for a couple years, and then I moved back with my mother. And it was always, you know, food for comfort. And, which was hard because my mother was a really bad cook. she, you know, I can never eat pork chops, not for religious reasons, but because I just can't. Incidentally, my mother made amends to me for being such a bad cook. She's been sober a long time. And it was we moved out to California when I was in right before ninth grade, and you know, and I would always go back, like a couple of times a year I would go back to my grandparents, and that's when the first disease, my own alcoholism, started to flower. And you know, and it was the same thing of just wanting to be numb, you know, and my favorite, you know, would be getting stoned and having brownies, you know, just because it killed two birds with one stone, quite frankly. You know, and I started in college. I remember going to England, and I was about 30, 40 pounds overweight. And the food is, I mean, if my mom's food is bad, English food was horrible. And I lost like 35, 40 pounds. And it was fantastic, you know. And then, sure enough, I ate dormitory food and put that weight back on, you know. And this sort of yo-yo. And in my early 20s, I got sober in AA. And what's interesting, a year before I got sober, I quit smoking, and I smoking had a tremendous effect on me in terms of my sinuses and just my lethargy. I quit smoking and lost 20 pounds, and then when I quit drinking, I put on that 20 and then some. And you know, but because it said in the book about chocolate, and loved, that was my favorite part of the book, you know, you know, because suddenly, you know, and I can remember, you know, and I, coming from AA, I had a sort of snobbery about, you know, well, the drugs and the alcohol were like, in some old stereos, they would have the big volume changer, and then there was a little volume changer, and I always thought of food as the little volume changer, because it just got, you know, just this sort of anger and the things that went in my life. It made it easier to cope. It made it, you know, I had a lot of trouble dating. I had, you know, work stuff, and food was always a friend. It was, you know, I can remember. There used to be an Italian restaurant in Westwood called Mario's, and I used to go there, and it was like I was on a date with myself, you know, because I was going to have a good meal, lots of bread, and you know, and just be satiated, and you know, and the first, and I must have been about 3 or 4 years sober, and I went in the 90s, and I went into another food program that had a very strict food plan, and I was younger. I was younger, and I lost 29 pounds in 30 days. And I did want 30 and 30 for the newcomer, I also had a very, you know, great metabolism. But I know that I didn't deal with the other issues. You know, I would, and it was a great diet because, you know. And then, you know, I would get some time and then go out. You know, and one of the things that, because I'm someone that has been in and out, you know, and the analogy of that tightrope walker on the World Trade Center still applies, you know. And there is a part of me that, you know, have pleaded with, not pleaded, but, you know, please God, just let me handle this. And you know, and what I know is that if I were somebody like that just ate a little too much now and again, you know, I would have come here, learned the lessons that I needed to, and not have been back. But you know, the truth of the matter is that I needed a different way, and you know, and I remember coming here again right before I got married, and then. You know, and the only trouble was that, you know, my wedding, and I literally wanted to have my cake and eat it too. So I went out, you know, and then I had a home group. I lived in the valley, And I remember, if my wife went to OA, maybe that would be the answer, and not me. And I was just embarrassed. I was just embarrassed And I remember, and I had been involved, and what I seemed to love to do was to go to the Gelson's parking lot in North Hollywood, buy frozen Nestle's frozen cookie dough, and eat that in the parking lot, looking out for OA members. and that ease and that comfort that gave me, not when I saw someone from OA, but I put it in the parking lot. I put it in the glove compartment. Don't forget. But that ease and that comfort, and the truth is, it changed how I feel, and it made how I feel. It just leveled. It made life easier, and food does something for me and to me, and what I know is that I'm powerless over food, and that my life's unmanageable, and one of the things that I married a woman who I love dearly, who's a food buddy, and when I came back into OA, it's something that I had to be really on guard, because I love my wife and I can confide in my wife a lot of things, but I have watched her play with food like I do, and one of the things that has helped me stay abstinent is that, by giving up the fight, by going to regular OA meetings and having a sponsor and working these steps and having commitments and sponsoring other people, is I'm in the middle. Because the truth is, I can't do it myself. I mean, if I could, you'd have a different speaker, and I just, and to me, this is the easier, softer way. I see my wife battle with food and the sneaking and the, I drive her car, and I'm not looking for food, but I just see it, and I'm just so grateful for me that I don't have to play that game, and I'm, and it's something, I came in, I'm down from, my top weight ever was about 240. I'm down about 20 pounds. I don't weigh myself, so I don't really know. The thing, I don't eat sugar. I have three meals a day. I have a snack. I started to, I did the steps, I'm incredibly grateful that I don't have to try to be on that wire, to try to walk that wire between the World Trade Centers by myself, because the truth is, I can't. It has never worked for me, and by doing some simple things, and I'm not alone, and I was able to look at, as the result of the 12-step process, I was able to look at the issues about being molested, and the secrets that I have aren't secrets, and to me, what I know is that it's this process, because by myself, I'm in the Gelson's parking lot eating cookie dough, looking out for OA members, it's about cunning, baffling, and powerful disease. I mean, why not go to Gelson's and drive elsewhere? But in any case, and just this sense of a camaraderie, that I've had, and doing the steps, and one of the things of hearing many different experiences, I don't know if you believe in God or not. You know, the thing that doesn't matter. I was willing to try to do this, whether I was going to do it because I wanted to prove to you it wasn't going to work for me. Because I've always thought of my case as a little bit different than everybody else. I mean, who names a Jew named Thor? I mean, come on, you know. I did meet another Jew named Thor. It really pissed me off, you know. But then again, he wasn't from New York, so it didn't matter. But what I know is what the problems that I've had, you know, is that I'm not alone. And, you know, and without being involved in getting help, and this sounds like, I'm not going to curse on this, but happy horse pucky. It sounds like what I learned in kindergarten. You know, and it's like, and I was a philosophy major in college for a brief time. That was a disaster, but the sense of something very practical, and to try this and not to do this alone, and you know, not feeling alone. I mean, it's such a relief. You know, I get reminded on a daily basis what it's like to try to do it by yourself, and it's really hard, and it's something that I'm grateful that I don't do. And what I can tell you is I don't know if there is a God or not. You know, I really don't. And to me, it doesn't matter. You know, the thing I love about this program is they talk about the tools, and the tools is the willingness to try to believe it, to do it, and not to take the action. This is about take action, and your thinking will change, and not think, and your actions will change. That has never worked, you know. And what I know is that I believe in something. I'm not really interested in do I believe or trying to figure it out. I mean. But what I know is that I have a degree of comfort, and just that I'm really grateful that I sort of threw in the towel, and what I've known is that I've needed you, and you've helped me tremendously in hearing, you know, I'm not necessarily interested in what people's higher power is, but how they tap into that. So if you're afraid of God or believe in God, I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, but this trying it and, you know, I mean, and take, you know, and not doing it alone and going to meetings and is a way to feel comfortable and not to, you know, one day at a time, not to overeat. And, you know, and for that, I'm really grateful. I'm really grateful, and I think I'm going to end with that. Thank you again for asking me, and thank you all. This is the time for questions only. There is no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leader are my own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. Please remember, if you ask a question, your voice may be audible on the OA podcast. Okay, any questions?
Robin, thanks a lot for your courage with Edmund's welcome. Molestation. How on earth do you deal with it? It suggests descendants are killer and you're pardoning it for something as grotesque as what you experienced.
Could you rephrase that question?
In the book,
yeah.
It says descendants are a killer, the big book.
Yeah.
And I think in the inventory it suggests that you look for a pardon it, isn't it? How on earth do you deal with something like that regards to what you experienced?
I dealt with that actually. I actually dealt that with my AA sponsor, who actually was a member of this group, And to me, it separated the difference between the event that happened. I mean, I was a child, you know, I was 7 years old, six, seven, eight. And what happened to me is absolutely not my fault. I'm a child. And but the resentment is. And just that sort of re-feeling it over, and, you know, what is it, resentment, to feel things over and over again. And when that was, and just that I was responsible for how I felt, and because I had to move away from, even though I was victimized as a child, if I take responsibility for how I feel, I can change things. And and to me, that was really helpful, because if there's ever a justifiable resentment that I can continue eating over, you know, and grinding over, that is that. And to me, you know, I have to look at my part, you know, and sometimes what was done to me was worse than my part, but I can't look at, if I'm looking at other people's, then I can sort of, the words escape me. My behavior gets, I'm not looking at my behavior. I'm not, and I can continue churning that and being a victim and staying stuck. But when I was able to do what that sponsor helped me do, I was able to do that and to get some relief. You know, and the truth is that, you know, just my, you know, my, and to share my experience, strength, and hope with that. I mean, the good news is, you know, that one, I don't have to eat over it, but that I've been able to have, to meet someone. I mean, to me, dating was like, was kind of like, I felt like I had a PTSD. It felt like when I dated, it felt like I had a gun to my head, and I didn't feel that. I met someone, you know, I got married, I have a normal sex life, you know, but had I remained in that place, I don't know that I've been able to move forward.
And thank you very much, Thor. Could you talk a bit of how you use the program on a daily basis?
I get up, I tend to get up about 15 minutes before I call my sponsor. I will, sometimes I'm on my knees, sometimes I'm not. I kind of grapple with that. You know, I thank God for my sobriety and for my abstinence. I meditate for about 7 or 8 minutes usually. And then I call my sponsor and call at, you know, usually between 7 and 7:05. And I call my, you know, just to touch base, and then, you know, to really try to, you know, and doing those things, it just changes. It's like an attitude adjustment, you know, because left to my devices, it's, you know, me, you know, where's mine, you know, you know, when I've sponsored people, you know, to share what has been shared with me, and to you know, and to you know, that by doing those things, I have a sense of freedom. You know, I know, like, you know, and it's a great freedom to go out to dinner and not have to, you know, and not have to debate whether I'm going to have a piece of cheesecake. Like, I could have one, but. You know, and to me, that is a great feeling, to be able to not have food run my life, and to have, most of the time, a sense of comfort and ease, and just not being alone. And, you know, lately I've been calling a few more people. It's something I've gotten lazy about, but just to be in the middle, the tools to not, as are a reminder to myself not to be alone and to reach out to others.
Thanks, Lord. So, how has the program helped you deal with your anger, or do you even get angry anymore?
Never. How does the program deal with my anger? I do use that. I will make outreach calls. And call people. I can be a difficult person to live with, and I get. You know, my wife and I are like a Neil Simon play. And you know what I know is that by reaching out and apologizing a lot, and it allows me to apologize. And I mean, I have a program, and you know, and my wife's what she does or whatever is not my business, which is really hard because I've got some really good ideas for her, but you know, but they're best kept to myself. And what I know is that, and I don't know if this is true, but it feels like I apologize more. And whether that's true or not is immaterial, but what it is the sense of, you know, when wrong, sort of a 10-step when wrong, promptly admitted it. And I just know, I mean, one of the things that I've heard say in these rooms that, you know, if you want, you know, when you are in a relationship, it'll put miracle grow on your character defects. And I had character defects I had no knowledge of until I was involved with someone and got married. I never knew I was a bully, you know, or that manipulative. but you know, by looking at apology, you know, just what has been helpful is to not do it myself, because I'll justify myself, and it has made the marriage a lot better.
Thank you. So, as it relates to your sponsor and your sponsor, you know, call every day.
Yeah.
How did that get structured? What does that structure look like? Is it like 15 minutes, or do you, like, how does it work? Is there something that you do each time, or do you just share what's on your mind? How does that, what does that look like?
Well, it's funny. Well, I think it like the my experience with what is the relationship in terms of the time of with my sponsor. I mean, that is sort of, I think people arrange that on their own. I had a certain time slot, and it's really funny you bring that up, because at first, and I sometimes think this, it's like there's some things I don't have a lot on that day, and I think I should fill this time. You know, but it's, you know, it's it, you know, it started, you know, calling in my food and you know, doing some writing, which I've got some writing that I've got to read, but it's just setting up a time that works. You know, he's got a life, and sometimes my schedule has been a little wonky, but it's been important. It's been an anchor, and it's very, you know, I couldn't have done this by myself. So.
Thanks, Dora. How do you handle your anonymity professionally, or with situations, or making amends? Do you identify as an OA member?
Well, when I make amends, do I identify as an OA member? Some of the amends, I mean, it's hard to talk strictly OA, because I've been making amends in another program for a long time, whether it's OA or AA. I think it's been a case-by-case basis, but I have some people I've broken my anonymity to, you know, some I haven't. I mean, I remember a number of years ago, with an OA sponsor in the Valley, I made some amends, and it was so interesting because he did the same. His job was somebody I had to make an amends to, who he did the same thing that a person that I had to make amends to, and I think I did tell him I was in 12-step, but I don't know that I told him what. I mean, but I know that I think it's sort of a case by case basis.
When you turn your will and your life over to care of your higher power, what does that look or feel like for you?
What does it feel like when I turn my will and my life over to the care of a higher power? I can tell you what I want it to feel like. I want to go on autopilot, but that's not what it is. I think it's a sense of a willingness to just do what's in front of me and let the results go. And it's really hard to not be in the results. I mean, I can remember something that a couple of years ago I've always wanted to write. And I would try to write and then clean the top of my fridge. And I'm not a neat freak. I'm really not. And I remember calling my sponsor and saying, I want to write. And he said, why don't you set an egg timer for half an hour and keep your butt in the chair and write? And and at first I thought, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And I did it. I set the timer. And it took a little while. And by doing that, and not being in the results, that's when I'm at my best. And I think that's where the tools come in, calling other people. I mean, I do believe this is a disease of, you know, incredibly self-centered. And just, you know, just that somehow doing what's in front of me and not getting in my own way has that's when I feel like I'm doing God's will, and I'm in something, and that it sometimes it takes a lot of work to get there.
So, being a couple of 12-step programs,
yeah.
How do you go through and do the steps formally again?
Yeah. Well, my AA sponsor seems to have issues with food, so I don't call him about that. But he hasn't asked for my opinion, so I don't give it. You know, one of the things that I had to be, you know, is, as I've heard other people who have been in multiple programs, is the credits don't transfer, you know. What does transfer is good attitude, you know, showing up on time, showing up early, those kind of things. But it's been very important, you know, to be, you know, if you to be teachable, because it's, you know, I know for myself that's imperative, and I have to, you know, there's some things. It just seems like it's naturally. I can't explain it, you know, but it sort of evolved, and I'm grateful for both, and I do know that, you know, the importance of calling in food, you know, so.
Thank you so much, Thor. Are there any specific character defects that you have seen improved or disappeared? That you could share with us, step 6 and 7?
I think a couple of things. In the last couple of years, I mean, I have struggled with work for the last couple of years, and just a lot, you know, in terms of procrastination. You know, the question is, what defects of character have been either lessened or removed? And I think just this to remain teachable, not to a big shot, you know. I'm a guy, if I cross the street, I want to write a book on world travel. You know? You know, and this sort of always remaining teachable. I also know that I've gotten better about with my wife, you know, in terms of her food, her life. I bite my tongue a lot more, but, you know, it just, you know, it's a sort of slow and steady progress. There's an old-timer that I heard that said, I still have those defects of character, and what this program allows me to do is that I have a choice. You know, what do I want to do? And, you know, and to me, I'd rather try to move forward.
I'm also on a couple of programs, and I'm not more time than one than the other. And recently, I've really struggled to stay with this program. This is the first thing I've been to probably 2 or 3 months. I think I kind of hit the weight that I wanted to get to, and I just kind of let this drop. And I'm wondering if you have any experience with just saying, hey, you know, I'm still doing fine in the other program, and thinking, I mean, I basically got to be shouting at my sponsor this morning about this, and his response, okay, fine. And I'll say, shit, you know, I don't want to hear that. But anyway, do you have any experience with thinking, you know, things are going okay, I really only need this program or something like that?
The question is, do I think, being in multiple programs, do I, and I'm doing fine in the other, and... yeah, I do. I have. You know, there have been a number of times I'm someone that has been in and out. And when I've reached sort of goal weight, it's like, I don't really have a problem. You know, and, you know, to me, it's, you know, in the big book, it talks about the difference between the alcoholic and the heavy drinker. And I think that for me, my experience has been that if I was just someone that ate a little too much, that if I wasn't a compulsive overeater, I would have gotten the food plan and this thing and gotten in and went to, you know, have gone in and out. And it just would have been a different thing. But I'm someone that, you know, I'm powerless on a daily basis over food. And to me, when I was in another food program, I actually was underweight. You know, and being at a certain weight is not necessarily a sense of sanity. I mean, I was like 150. You know, I was like a 30 waist, which is, I mean, I hadn't been that like that since like 8 or 9. And what I know is that if I really identify, I mean, as an overeater, I mean, there's a part of me, it's like, in this town, you could almost put AA on your resume, almost, and sort of being in OA. But it's, you know what? What I have noticed, I pay a big price, and I'd be happy to share with you after the meeting. And thank you for sharing that.
Thank you so much. How do you take step one?
How do I take step one? I think there are a number of ways I take step one. I think calling a sponsor, sponsoring other people. I mean, it was really interesting. Some months ago, I sponsored 2 people from a treatment center, and I mean, it was like a $30,000 treatment center a month, you know. I'm saying 2 things at once. Just the tools that I've learned here, you know, to reach out, have commitments, you know, to not do it myself. We admitted we were powerless. You know, when I'm powerless, that's a short time and that's a diet, and it works for a short time. Any experience making amends to myself? Oddly enough, yes. I'm somewhat of a traditionalist in the sense, you know, there's some debates about do we make amends to ourselves and all that. And what I do know is the way to make amends to myself is to live a life that's different than my old way. You know, and people call it authentic, but treating my wife the way I would like to treat her, doing those things, because there's not if I just try to love myself, there's not enough love, you know, in the world for me. I mean, I've felt like empty, and you know, I'm someone that it just is a whore for attention. You know, I mean, I, you know, I walk into rooms and want everybody to stand up and give me applause and write large checks to me. And it's never enough. But also the sense of giving back, you know, when I have sponsored people, I mean, I learn more from them. You know, so, I don't know. What time do we go to?
We've got 2 minutes.
Any?
Do you still get urges, or if you don't, what did you do in the beginning when you would still get urges?
Do I still get urges? I do. I'll make some calls. I'll find a place to be grateful. Sometimes I'll go to another room. You know, I can tell my spiritual quality when I'm shopping, because I will still pass the chocolate cookie dough and so, you know, and you know, there's some days where it goes, oh, it looks really good, and some days I can sort of wave goodbye, and you know, you never write, you never call. You know, it's a daily thing. Is that it? Okay. Thank you.